Interspaces.
An interdisciplinary podcast.
Welcome back to Interspaces, the science podcast of SIF, a center for interdisciplinary research based at Bielefeld University. I'm Rebecca Moltmann and I'm looking forward to today's episode. Today I have returning guests with me. We already recorded an episode together in which we spoke about the rise of right-wing populist and right-wing extremist parties, politicians, movements and groups. When we recorded the episode, the German elections were just around the corner and we decided afterwards to meet up for an update to follow up on a few questions that were raised in our last conversation. Paula Diehl and Birgit Sauer, the conveners of the SIF research group Normalizing the Far Right, are back here with me today. Thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Nice to see
Hello.
You.
Hello. Yep. Hi.
I mean, I basically already told the listeners what we're going to talk about. So we talked about examples from different countries regarding the normalization of right-wing positions last time. When we directly get back to the German case, what are you thinking about that now that we know what happened during the elections and that the AfD, the Alternative für Deutschland, got so many votes?
Paula, you start.
Okay. It is an interesting result from the scientific perspective because we have the conservative party, the Christian Democrats, being the first party with less than 30%. The second party was the right-wing populist party, AfD, Alternative for Germany, with almost 20% of the votes, which is quite concerning because it's the second party to achieve a such high number in voters' preference. However, what we see is a kind of fragmentation of the party landscape. So we don't have the majority with two strong parties as we used to have in the past, but we have many forces competing with each other. And now some of the parties which were competing for going into the parliament failed to come into the parliament because they got less than 5% of the votes. And that makes the things less complicated because regarding these results, we can now have a coalition of the Christian Democrats with the Social Democrats bypassing the AfD.
Yeah, and this is a different situation than in Austria. We have been talking about the normalization of the Freedom Party of Austria in the last episode. And there we could see that the Freedom Party won the most votes and has been sidelined by the other parties in a first try to form a government, which was then unsuccessful. And then the right wingers, the FPÖ, tried to get into government and the Christian conservatives started negotiations with the right wing FPÖ. So, and this was a sign for normalization, while in Germany, the AfD won a lot of the popular vote, but wasn't as strong to claim the possibility to get into government coalition negotiations. So, but what was interesting is that, especially in the eastern provinces, the AfD won a lot of the popular vote. And before the elections already, the AfD proclaimed that they have been normalized. And this is also what Alice Weidel, one of the co-leaders of the party, repeated after the vote, saying, well, the Christian conservative, they stole our program. Just to show that they are the main the spirit of the Christian conservative, especially with respect to migration policies and banning and prohibiting migration and asylum seekers at the borders. So there is this triumph of the AfD saying, well, we are the real winners because we can set the agenda for migration policies. And we are rewarded with 20% of the popular vote.
And they are right. And that's the point. If you look at the program and the campaign, not only the Christian Democrats shift toward the right, the far right, but also the other parties, the whole spectrum is shifting. And in this sense, I think that it's a double message here. And on the first level, it is a kind of analytical approach to the normalization of the far right. But in the second level, it's also a performative way to improve the normalization of the far right, saying we are now normal means we have become that and contributes to make them become normal.
I mean, it's shocking because you usually don't agree with what they say, but I was going to say the exact same thing. It's just, it's right. It's true. So, and I think that's kind of shocking if you have to admit that they kind of set the tone, especially about the topic of migration. And I think that's not very nice to hear. But you compared like the situation in Austria with the one in Germany. What do you think are the different consequences of these different Gemengelage? What's the Gemengelage?
I don't know. Mixtures.
You can
mixed
Google
situation.
It.
The mixed situation. Yeah. 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 Well, what we could see for Austria is then that the conservatives and the Social Democrats finally then restarted negotiating a government coalition, and they took in the third party, the Liberal Party, into government, and they tried to counter the FPÖ's narrative of saying, well, we are the winners of the election and we are sidelined and you are the loser government. And they tried to counter this by saying that, well, we want more than 70% of the vote, which is interesting. But what we can see, like in Germany, is that now the new government coalition also goes on saying, well, we have to ban migration, we have to stop family reunions of migrants and refugees, which is, by the way, very dangerous because it's a family reunion mainly for young unaccompanied minors or for young migrant men. And if they are left without their families in asylum homes, it is a sort of breeding surrounding for terrorism. But this is nevertheless what the government in Austria does. So they are also buying into the anti-migration propaganda of the right-wing party. And what we saw in Germany, that the Christian Democrat then candidate Merz, he wanted to test how far he can go in his anti-migration policies. And he launched first as a sort of petition, then it should become a law. And he launched this into the German Bundestag. And he was aware that the other parties won't vote for his suggestion. But he then said, okay, well, whatever it takes, we go with the Alternative for Germany. So, and then this was was then clear for Germany. This was a breakdown of the so-called firewall against the political right. And it was clear that Merz tries to gamble with this connection to the AfD. I think he lost a little bit of the vote, not that much, but it led then to a further fragmentation. of the landscape, the political landscape, and the parties in parliament. But because the Left Party was the winner of this action, while the Bündnis Sarah Wagenknecht, who has always been on the side of the AfD with restrictive migration policies, with a pro-Russian policy, they didn't make it into the parliament due to this, I would say, due to this turn of Merz too.
Because of 0.03%.
This was tragic. It's really somehow tragic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But and I think one thing that we are observing and unfortunately confirming our research on the normalization of the far right is the fact that normalization is not only something that happens because one particular actor is influencing the public sphere. We have here a conjuncture where all actors, inclusive the media, journalists, and so on, take a big part on this normalization. And concerning the German campaign for the new parliament, we have an emphasis on the migration issue, but not only the migration issue as such, but the frame used to portray migration was exactly the frame of the AfD, which means the solution for the problem of migration. So first, migration is portrayed as a problem. And second, there is a solution, and this solution is deportation. So there are, in the end, there was no doubt about what should be a good policy dealing with migration. And if one of the debates between the Social Democrat candidate Olaf Scholz and the Christian Democrat candidate Friedrich Merz, one of the most important debates, I stopped my watch and I saw 24 minutes used to discuss migration question, and all the questions run in the direction of how can we effectively deport minors? So there was no question, including from the journalists, if you can, how can you integrate people? How can you make them productive? We have a lack of men and women power in Germany. We are now lacking people in the hospitals, people in all kinds of works. And migration experts are always saying you need to integrate them in order to have them this lack closed that we have right now. And that this was not at all an issue during 24 minutes of debate on migration.
I think that's so interesting to remember that it's not only the enemies and you think, okay, they're at fault. But I mean, a lot of actors, as you said, like even journalists, and not just from the papers we maybe think are not that great, but from all kinds of media departments. And I think that's very important to stress. You mentioned, you explained that the coalition, of course, won't entail the AfD, but they still are a really big force in the opposition, have a lot of seats. Will that influence how the debates in the parliament will further like normalize issues like that?
Sure, it's already influencing. I mean, you have in the last government, the parliament was disrupted by some of the politicians of the AfD, and the whole way the democratic debate is taking place is changing because of these influences. And now we will have an increase of the AfD as the majority party in the opposition. And as such, they will have some privilege, for example, to increase their possibility to send questions to the parliament. And they have done that for the last years, sending a lot of questions to the parliament so that the whole apparatus gets immobilized in order to answer these questions. That's a very technical problem. And the other one, how are the questions framed that they are sending? And depending on the frame of your question, you are suggesting some causalities. And that's something that we need to pay attention in the future.
So just to give one example, the AfD launched these kleine Anfragen, these questions to the Bundestag, but also to provincial parliaments on the issue of gender studies. And they always were inquiring how much money do the provinces spend to pay either scientific projects on gender studies or professors on gender studies. And they always assume that this is money spent totally in vain, because it's not science what gender studies does. So, and the idea is to intimidate gender studies people. I think this is the main thing, because it's not really so. These kleine Anfragen, of course, they are present in parliament, but they are targeted at specific groups to intimidate them. And the other thing is, what is very interesting is that there are studies about shouting and rude behavior in parliament. And these studies show that it's mainly coming from the AfD. So they also intimidate their parliamentary colleagues and try to shout them down, for instance. So, which is, I think, an interesting aspect with respect to the institution of the parliament. They just disregard the parliament as the place where it is important to publicly discuss, where majority, of course, decisions are made. They just want to discredit and run down the parliament. So this is one part of their de-democratization strategy. And I think it's also part of their normalization strategy, because since the COVID pandemic, there is so many debate about politicians do not deliver what they should do, and they only are talking and not deciding. And I think this is what the AfD also wants to show with when they try to discredit the parliament.
And I mean, the question now is how institutions and political actors are behaving facing this kind of challenges. I think democracy will really need to be strong, and it means to keep strong in the posture which is democratic, and it goes with the institutions. So we are seeing in other parts of the world that institutions are very fragile, and you need people to defend the institutions, otherwise it doesn't work. So now it everything depends on the behavior of those who are in parliament, the behavior of those who are in other parties, and the behavior of those who are in institutions and civil society.
And this leads us also to major issues that are at stake. And this is the narration on the migration issue again, because if the other parties do not see that these anti-migration policies also feed into policies against democracy, if they do not see that they erode human rights, that they erode citizenship rights, not only of migrants, but also of the sort of majority society, and if they do not try to reframe the migration issue, as we have been talking before, that the countries in Europe, that they are depending on migrant labor, there won't be a change. And this will then lead to more anti-democratic perspectives.
And maybe I think one issue that we are not seeing very represented in public media discourse is the issue of what are the other problems that people are living today. And one of them is, for example, housing. We have a crisis of housing. We have a crisis of infrastructure. Germany didn't invest in infrastructure for 30 years. And now everything is collapsing. And what you see here is a real simplification of the issues, just shifting all the causes of that towards migration. But I mean, our trains will not run better if you have no migrants. And our schools will not be better if you have no migrants. Of course, and that's the point that I think for small places and cities is important to look at that. If you have a precarious infrastructure, if you already have problem in providing infrastructure for the population who is living there, you will probably have a overwhelming situation if other people comes to it. And these other people will be the migrants. Of course, there is this kind of overlapping of infrastructure problems. But from that to say the problem are the migrants, it's too easy to be true. So the solution is much more complicated. And what is interesting in the process of normalization is that this complicated situation is not portrayed anymore. So it means medias and politicians, but also actors from the civil society are not addressing these problems anymore. And then you have a very difficult situation to be reverted.
I think it's very interesting that you brought up all the other infrastructure issues, because you really like almost forget about that, and that it gets like explained as everything comes down to migration, basically. But I mean, the security issue is something I meet a lot outside my academia bubble. If I talk to other people, they really tell me quite often that they don't feel like safe in their country anymore, and I think that's the perfect example for having to reframe the narrative. So why are you aren't you feeling safe? So why that doesn't really have to do anything with migration or with anything in this realm in a lot of the cases. Or yeah.
Yes and no, because I mean, if you look at the numbers, you have less violence than you had a couple of decades ago, right? But if you look at the spectacular events, then you have a lot of them, and they are mass media attractions. So if you have one mass attack in a Christmas market, that will attract a lot of attention, even though it's just one episode. And of course, it puts people in a situation that they feel very insecure. And you are concerned in avoiding public spaces and so on. And that's a problem. So yes and no, there is also this problem going on, and also concerned by the overexposition in the media. But it's something that it's new for European societies, new in terms of 20 years, and it's something that we need to cope with, and it's not easy, and I fully understand that people is afraid of this kind of situation.
Yeah, with respect to the security issue, I think it has a lot of dimensions. So one dimension is really that the right wingers jump on the security issue and they create situations of insecurity. And also, or especially with respect to migrants, and they mobilize against migrants, saying our women are not safe anymore. They can't go on the streets alone at night because they are threatened by aggressive and violent migrants. So I think this is one dimension of this normalization process, because they explicitly jumped on the security issue. And the other thing is, which is also part of our reality, is the problem of war. And they also exploited the war of Russia against Ukraine, and the rising spending for military in the Western parts to create insecurity. And I think it's always, let's say, it's always the failure of a mainstream party not really to embed their policies, either their austerity policies or their deficit spending policies, in a narration that clearly says, well, we have to spend, we think we have to spend money for military, but we also have to spend money for social issues. And this will be, again, exploited by right-wingers in Austria as well as in Germany, because they can then jump on the issue of lacking social security, of lacking housing, for instance. And I think this is the failure of mainstream party to just tell the whole picture and to tell the complexity of what is going on these days.
I mean, we kind of already talked about an outlook into the future, which obviously we cannot give, or you cannot put bets on it or something like that. But did the change in situation in the last like months, so to speak, change anything about what you said in the last episode, or about what maybe research could focus on more, or anything like that?
Well, I would say what we've been studying in the project at CIF was already focusing what now happened, because we were somehow sadly predicting that right-wing narratives and issues will be normalized, meaning that the right-wingers will gain more votes in next elections. And meaning also that, especially with respect to migration, the climate will become chillier. And I think this is what happened. And now we are confronted that if we look into coming national elections in 4 years in Germany, in 5 years in Austria, we have to look, what can we do to stop de-democratization, to stabilize democratic institutions, to stabilize institutions of the rule of law. I think this is what research has to do.
Yeah, and I mean, the point is here, we have a lot of countries where the far right is already in power. And we are also having new elections in France this year, which means that it is another country which is about to shift. And interestingly, the example of France show us what comes with that. You have a far-right normalization, and you have also a radicalization in form of competitors, which helps to the normalization, and normalization helps to radicalization. And the question is now how to react to it, how established democratic parties can stay democratic. It's not only about building a cordon sanitaire or a firewall. It's much more about the own behavior of all actors in the political landscape.
I think almost everything you say basically sounds like a good closing word, so to speak, because it's just such an virulent topic, and a lot of people are concerned with it, of course. And I'm, I don't want to say excited. I'm interested, because I'm not excited, but I'm interested to see in which direction we're going in all the countries, maybe in Europe or in the US, or in, everywhere in the world, basically. So, yeah, if you don't have any further closing statement, I would say that concludes our little update talk. Thank you very much for being here again. And thanks for talking about it so openly and interestingly. And yeah, thanks.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
And as usual, everything, we haven't really talked about resources in this episode, but you will find the links to the websites of Paula Diel and Birgit Sauer and the ZIF Research Group in the show notes. And yeah, Thank you for listening, and until next time.
Thank you.